Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop, and it's Metal Shop Backstage Pass right now. I'm talking with Tim Singer, a vocalist of Dead Guy, Kiss It Goodbye, No Escape, Process Black, and now Bitter Branches. I was actually just jamming the new Bitter Branches EP at work today. It's awesome. First off, thanks for coming on. How are you doing today? How are you doing tonight, actually?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. I'm a dad, so all my kids started school today. So that's about as not punk rock as it gets, I guess. But yeah, it's funny. Like, summer ended with like a flick of a switch, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of us in the house with laptops and Zoom calls, and
yeah,
sort of surreal.
So I know that in some places in the United States they're allowing some schools to open up and minimal like stuff like that, but you guys are all online, right?
Yeah, everything's remote so far.
That's
and yeah, we'll see how it goes. I care. I'm happy if they stay remote. It seems stressful to try to figure all this shit out. I don't know. I got other things in my mind, like the election and shit like that.
Oh yeah. As far as like, you know, so being having that role of being a dad and like trying to also like, you know, stay mentally like. Wrap your head around all of this crazy I imagine is a lot, but also like how much do you let them know about like the coronavirus? Do you tell them about that kind of stuff? Can they even really like wrap their head around what the
yeah,
hell
I
is
mean,
going on?
Believe it or not, I've got twins that are 16 and my oldest daughter is starting her second year of college.
Oh, so, okay, cool. So they're definitely...
Oh, yeah. So it's funny because the rest of the guys in my band all have those little kids. And I'm the guy who got the earlier start. So my kids are, you know, they're like peers. And we're all collectively...
Okay.
It's nice because we're all collectively pissed off about the same things politically. And, yeah, you can have like grown-up conversations about it, which I think makes it a little more tolerable. My bandmates are going a little insane trying to deal with, you know, tiny ones that are stuck in the house and don't quite understand what's going on.
Man, that would be so hard as a little kid to just be like, wait, why can't I play with my kids? Or why can't I play with my friends? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, and like you're trying to explain, like, if you're, you know, always like, if they're, you know, that it could affect their grandparents and, like, you know, and not try to scare the shit out of them. And
yeah.
Also not try to go too nuts because they're in the house all day when they used to, like, go to, you know, school. So, the band's Bitter Branches, we meet, like, once a week, like, either in a giant warehouse where we can be far apart or my backyard if we don't want to plug in.
Okay.
And we sort of, you know, we keep our distance and yeah. I can tell that everybody's just sort of fried. You know what I mean?
Totally.
You kind of truck along and honestly, like music was my outlet as a teenager and it's been like my outlet for through this. Like it's kept me sort of sane.
That's my question was like, how are you staying sane? And you kind of just answered my question is like, you know, through music, right? And then that's kind of just kept you together.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny cause you know, Bitter Branches finished recording I did my vocals like the last time, the last thing I did socially, like before everything shut down.
Wow. Okay.
And we sort of knew the writing was on the wall, and Dead Guy was also in the midst of, like, you know, we had just sort of had our first in-person reunion with the five of us. You know, we were planning on some things, like, you know, working on this documentary, reissue, a 25th anniversary reissue of Fixation. Mm-hmm. You know, some fests here and there, so, you know, a weekend in Brooklyn, and like all sorts of all that stuff sort of came to a screeching halt, and you sort of shift gears, and I became more of like this sort of, like, luckily we could promote the Bitter Branches record and sort of network and do all that kind of stuff, and, you know, that keeps you busy, and it's actually been sort of gratifying, because I normally in life don't have the time to check out as much new music as I'd like, and now I've got all sorts of time to do that, and I've connected with bands all over the country, and it's been cool, actually.
Well, you're finding some positives out of it, man. I guess you kind of have to, and for me personally, it's kind of been a chance for me to keep my life a little bit more simple, like and which I since I was a teenager, my identity was just always being at shows and going to shows and just being a music lover and kind of part of that whole world, and not having that outlet, I'm like finding other healthy ways to spend my time. Okay. I guess I have to go running or something. So, man, it's a weird time, but it sounds like you're navigating pretty well. I have a Dead Guy t-shirt. On the back of it, it says "Death to False Metal." Can I get the story? Can I get the story about that?
No, I wouldn't be the one to tell you that story, sadly.
Oh, okay.
It's like, because, like, so many things with the band, like even Fixation on a coworker, like, so many of the, like, you'd almost have to get all of us to talk about it. Where the did that really come from?
Yeah.
Like, we used to make, like, we had so many sayings. Like, we used to make business cards that said, like, you know, Jesus hates you, Satan thinks you're cute, you know, so it's like the Depth of False Metal, it became a thing, like one of our little phrases, and, like, you know, we made so many t-shirts it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think, I'm sure it's based on something, like it's a spoof on something, because we were always spoofing something. Then it became sort of a mantra, like, because we're always sort of poking fun at ourselves, like when the band started, like, you know, we're five dorks from New Jersey who just were ambitious and wanted to be different and wanted to kind of push things, but also didn't think we were like rock stars. We just thought, like, we literally, like, we didn't know if we sucked, we didn't know if we were the best thing since sliced bread. We couldn't even tell in the beginning that the show was, like, you could sort of see the head nodding and stuff, but, like, you know, we don't have mosh parts, and we all came from the heart, like, more typical hardcore scene. So it was, you know, but we're ripping off more like AMREP stuff and like that, and just being influenced by that and everything else, like metal and everything. Right. But we never really, you know, we weren't like, we're the next, whatever. We loved what we were doing, mm-hmm. and we sort of did it to 11. And we just had, you know, we just liked to kind of with everything, and Death to False Metal was sort of fit into that.
Yeah.
But man, it's funny because, you know, 20 years later, like, I see so many people with that shirt. Like, that shirt is like, I can't even explain it. Like, I've seen it, like, people send me links to that. I swear to God, like, people on the moon wear that shirt. Like, it's like on everybody. It's unbelievable. I was talking to Dave today, the drummer.
Yeah.
I could ask him.
Sure.
No. Like, if you know specifically, but he'd probably be like, I don't fucking know. Like, that's sort of, when we all get together and people ask us these things, we're like, we sort of remember how the name came about. We sort of remember, like, you know, stuff like that. So I'm sorry if that was.
Oh, it's all good. I can tell that you guys have probably have a pretty good time when you're hanging out. You probably have a lot of inside jokes and stuff. So, you know, I'm assuming it's just something that spawns from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because we took the music super seriously, mm-hmm. right? Like, we really, you know, we thought we found our own way, and we thought we were onto something, and we can love it, right? Mm-hmm. And I took my lyrics super seriously, but then, like, the prison, like, I never wanted to seem macho. I never wanted to seem like we were trying to be cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's that fine line between taking it seriously and acting like you're hot. You know what I mean?
So totally.
We almost bent over backwards to not act like hot, you know, and have fun with the presentation stuff and, you know, all the t-shirts and everything else.
Well, something I saw, speaking of t-shirts, is so I'm subscribed to the magazine Decibel, the metal magazine, and they kind of did an homage to the Dead Guy, Death to False Metal t-shirt. Did you get a kick out of that when you saw it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I talked to those guys because we were trying to, like, recreate. I mean, the Decibel guys are great. They're like at this point, I feel like they're in our inner circle because
awesome.
Like, the first time the five of us talked after, you know, 15 years was when Decibel interviewed us for their Hall of Fame thing.
Yeah, which is so cool.
And that sort of, and then we actually thought something might pick up a little steam from that. And then we all just sort of, I don't know, we're all knee deep in having families and stuff like that. And we lived all over the place and nothing mm-hmm. really came of it. But they did that. And it's funny because, we've just been chatting with them a lot because we were going to do the Decibel Fest, and that's been, like, postponed three times now.
Yeah.
So I knew about that. There's a couple people reach out to me when they want to do spoofs on stuff, like Rich Hall. I don't know if you know him.
He's out there.
Yeah. Seattle area. He did the Dad Guy shirts. He reached out to me, made sure it was cool. You know?
That's awesome.
He sent me one. I gave him my blessing. Thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. That's great, man. You were mentioning, so it is, first off, congratulations. It is the 25th anniversary of Fixation on a Coworker, which is probably weird to hear people talk about. I imagine it's pretty surreal to think that was 25 years ago. Obviously, we're talking about the Dead Guy album, Fixation on a Coworker. And if you're listening now and you haven't heard that record, press pause here real quick, jam that record, have your mind blown, and then come back. So you guys have some reissue news about that?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the middle of trying to figure out a special reissue for that. It was on Victory. I think Victory got bought, and we're trying to figure out all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because with Bitter Brand, like, I'm doing reissues of, like, all of a sudden I'm doing my first band, No Escape, we're doing a reissue. So I'm working on vinyl packaging for that. Bitter Branches, I just did vinyl packaging. Like, Dead Guy, I've dug up all the old stuff, so I'm trying to find all the original. I mean, it was so long ago. Like, think about software 25 years ago. And,
yeah.
You know, and, like, uncovering those files, and they're, you know, it's like, can I even open this? So, I mean, I don't want to just do, like, Dave and I were talking, we don't want to just, like, here's a colored vinyl reissue. I want it to be something sort of cool.
Yeah.
Right, especially vinyl's so sort of collectible and precious now. Like, you don't press 20,000 of it anymore because it's sort of for the collectors.
Totally.
So I want to just make a really cool package. So that's something. And COVID's actually bought us a little bit more time.
There you go.
Because I think pretty much November was supposed to be when a lot of shit was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, this documentary that was really the cause for us to get the room together again is going to debut and all this stuff. And now it's like, in some ways, there's a time to do, like, an even bigger effort, you know, in the documentary. Like, the amount of people that have agreed to be interviewed for this is humbling.
Yeah.
So it keeps getting longer. We didn't want to do this long thing, and it's not really us doing it, but we're helping, obviously, to do it in it. But so I don't know. We'll see. So I guess we'll be the big 26. You know, like, who the hell knows?
Yeah,
so
there you go.
It's fun because, like, there's a lot of creative stuff to work on, and it feels like it should all lead to some live stuff, but who the hell knows what that's going to be.
I think in 2021, everyone will kind of understand that, hey, maybe it wasn't the 25th anniversary, but we can just kind of forgive, because last year was is what we'll say. So
right, yeah, exactly. yeah, it's like the unpause. I actually think everybody's just going to spontaneously combust. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Like, Jesus Christ, can we just wipe that off the slate? I don't know. So the documentary is still being worked on?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's this guy, Bill Fourth, I think it's called Fourth World Media. Yeah, Bill's working on it. It's like, he's just cranking.
That's awesome.
It's like he's doing it independently. He's a fan of the band. He happened to run into Dave, and there's a whole long story there, but he ran into Dave. This guy's a total, he's like a pro. Like, he works on like those HGTV shows and
cool.
But he's total hardcore metalhead. And you know, super fan of Dead Guy, and just, I think, always wanted to do it. And then literally spent time with Dave, and they started talking. And next thing you know, Dave's reaching out to all of us to kind of try to get us in a room together.
Yeah.
You know, so we all ended up in Hoboken hanging out. And yeah, and, you know, the first trailer I thought was pretty hilarious. It was pretty spot on.
Right.
So yeah, we'll see where everything goes.
Cool, man. Well, I'm stoked to see that when it comes out, and I'm sure, you know, we'll be keeping updated with that as the time comes. And you mentioned the No Escape reissue. I wanted to shout out John Pettibone from Eris and Himsa. He gave me a No Escape original cassette. I'm looking at it right now. It says $2 postpaid.
Nice.
Yeah. So
I got... how's that even possible?
Yeah, it's the original cassette on Maxell. So, shout out to John.
Yeah, Pettibone's awesome, man. I remember seeing his first bands in New Jersey. I met him and Damien, who ended up in Kiss or Goodbye.
Yeah, Undertow.
Yeah, we all became fast friends. And then, you know, Ron, who passed away last year, Ron Rodney, put out the No Escape album.
Oh, you know? Really?
Awesome, dude.
Ron Gardapi, R.I.P.
Yeah.
Right on, man. That's cool.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Seattle interwoven with like every band of mine, really.
Yeah. Right on, man. Well, you're speaking of, like, you know, all your bands and whatnot. Your newest band is called Bitter Branches. As I said in the beginning of the interview, I listened to it today. It's awesome. I'm getting kind of like Swizz vibes a little bit in it, but not like, I'm not trying to say.
I hear that a lot, yeah.
But like, it's just, it's awesome, man. It's like melodic, but just also dark. I'm wondering, like, when did the project get going? Who are the other guys in the band with you, and how do you know them? And like, what's kind of like the formation story of Bitter Branches?
Yeah, that's a good one. So I was at a show, a benefit show for a friend of mine, Howie.
Okay.
And this band, Alone in the Crowd, that was on.
Oh, yeah.
Fairly label. Yeah. They did a reunion show to raise money. So I was at the show, and I'm getting texts from my daughter going, this guy, Jeff Tirabassi, you know, says he knows you. And I just face painted his daughter, because my daughters are older, right? So they were at this. They're at their teacher's daughter's birthday party.
Oh, wow.
And my kids are the older kids, the teenagers, and they're doing the face painting of all the little kids at this party.
Yeah.
Their teacher has a really young daughter. So my now drummer, Jeff, has a really young daughter who's at that party. So Jeff has Stella texting me, and Stella's my daughter. And next thing I know, you know, Jeff and I are exchanging texts, and we knew each other from back in the day. He's in Walleye, which is on J Tree, and like Walleye and No Escape played a ton of shows together.
That's awesome.
And they played shows with Dead Guy too. And so we just go way back, right? And I don't think I'd seen him in 20 years. And it turns out we lived like a mile from each other.
That's rad.
So I thought he just wanted to grab coffee. When we grab a coffee, he like flies me, he pitches me this new band. And I was like, I don't know, you know, because I was sort of semi-retired. And I'd done some projects like Process Black and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's just persistent. He's like, just come to practice. You know, I played the demo that they had already recorded, and it sounded very DC to me. And I was like, I don't know if I can do, you know, I don't know if I'm your guy, because I'm not, you know, I don't sing like Dave Smalley or, you know, those types of people, right?
Yeah.
But Swizz is a good example, because that's like, to me, true hardcore vocals against the DC sound.
Totally.
So we go to practice, and I do my thing over their songs, and it's sort of like what I've been blessed with all my bands is they started to write around my style.
Oh,
right?
Cool, yeah.
Turns out they sort of wanted to. They wanted to get a little darker. And I've always wanted to do something more in the vein of the Laughing Hyenas, you know, I guess Swizz, Jesus Wizard, you know, early Sub Pop stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty rocking.
Just stuff that I think is heavy without necessarily. I didn't want to do another Dead Guy kind of band or another Kiss Goodbye kind of band. It's like I've already done that, right? And so this just worked out. Like we have all the same. We love all the same. Like, you know, we all worship Steve Albini or like early Soundgarden, like whatever it is, right?
Yeah,
like, just along the same way. Like it could be PJ Harvey, whatever it is. Like we almost. We're not being close with each other. We're all, and it reminds me of Dead Guy, where we all have sort of similar wavelengths, like we're all sort of vibing off each other. And then, so another guy in the band I didn't know ahead of time. It's this guy, DK, on bass, and Kevin on second guitar, and Matt, Kevin and Matt on guitar, I don't know which one's first, which one's second. Matt was in Cavalry. He came by way of. He moved to Philly from New York, but he lived in Chicago. Kevin and DK are like Philly homegrown guys. And, everybody's righteous. We're all, you know, it's just a fit. It was like an easy fit, you know. And somehow we've become a hardworking band, even though we all have little kids.
Dude, that's awesome, man. That's cool. And you said you're just making it work, you know, practice, whether it's, you said outdoors, and just getting together or like in a big warehouse. That's, you guys are obviously, if you can make it through this right now, then I think you guys, will have a good head start.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of what we're hoping, you know, it's frustrating, but you know, you can't feel sorry for yourself because there's people going through some real misery. But, you know, it's like we were in, like, we recorded to almost see, like, what do we actually sound like, you know?
Yeah.
And we, like, turned it into a record and stuff because we liked it. But, you know, we were finally like, oh, that's what we sound like, you know? Like when you are able to step outside of it and, like, just listen to it. And we sort of feel like we found our lane and, you know, like, how we want to pursue the songwriting and stuff like that. And... you know, other than sort of screeching halt, but we're all sort of, we did all the cliche things. We had Zoom meetings and, you know, all this stuff. I have an attached garage and a big backyard, so we sort of sat far apart and they played really, these really tiny amps and we try to write that way, you know?
Yeah.
And then we're lucky we have access to this ginormous warehouse where we can be super loud and still.
That's awesome.
Sort of be separate. Yeah, I think we're luckier than most in that regard. We're trying to take advantage of it, you know?
Hell yeah, man. So, again, you can check out the new Bitter Branches record, the EP, and do you still have physical copies available?
Yeah, it's on Tonic Action, so you can go to their... you know, Instagram, website, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's atomicactionrecords.com.
Okay.
That's where you can order the Bitter Branches stuff. You know, it's on all those channels, typical channels like Bandcamp, like that.
Yeah.
And then No Escape is actually going to be on Hellmouth Records, which is, I think, a newer label, but it's out of New Jersey. We put out Second Arrows, which is Crispy from Dead Guy. And if you haven't heard about Second Arrows, you should definitely check that out.
Cool.
It's pretty freaking awesome. So that's Hellminded. Yeah. They just put out the new Shades Apart and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
Second Arrow is obviously because it's Crispy. I'm just like, I already had a soft spot for it before I heard it. And then I heard it and I was like, this is good.
That's awesome.
So it's like, and it's funny because we're already talking about like, we want to play shows with that band and that band and that band. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're already figuring out like a route that you want to go, and you're like, all right, line up the next five years. And
I mean, there's so many good bands like, that have been coming out, you know, like from all over the country, like Easy Prey down in Texas, and Be Well's taking the world by storm, and Every Scar is a Story. And I mean, Desperate Living is another Philly band that's like amazing. It's kind of cool because I am not the guy to know about new stuff, but now I just. I'm like, I absorbed with it. It's pretty awesome. And I'm actually working on putting out a comp.
Rad.
Through Hellminded too, where it's sort of my job right now to find some not so known bands and mm-hmm. get them on this comp, and then it's going to raise money. We haven't figured out exactly the cause yet.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I love putting records together again, so it's like my thing.
That's cool, man. So I got to ask, like, what are your resources to do that? Are you just doing a lot of like scouring the internet? Obviously, there's no shows we can go to right now. How are you? You know, are there certain resources?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff and I were just talking, and we've just been networking, right?
Yeah.
Like, through Bandcamp, sometimes you just follow a link or someone might mention something.
Yeah. Go down a rabbit hole.
You know, like, and like, you just reach out. Like,
yeah.
It's funny, because, when Second Arrows came out, I know Crispy, obviously, mm-hmm. from Dead Guy. And I just commented on the Instagram feed, and the next thing I know, Hellminded Records is reaching out to me.
That's awesome.
About the No Escape stuff. But I might post something, a like on a band, and they might be like, oh my God, I'm a Kiss You Goodbye fan from yesteryear. And next thing I know, I have a relationship with that band and
yeah.
you know, stuff like that. So, I think the fact that I'm an old band and I have all these punk points, and
there you go.
Some of my bands have a little bit of notoriety.
That helps.
I've turned that into like a way to network and discover new music, and I just want to shine a light on it because it's really cool, and it's also not the boys club it was 25 years ago, which I think is really cool.
That is that's even something that I've noticed over the past 10-15 years is how much more inclusivity and much more like you know, regardless of gender, sex, race, and it just seems like it's opened up and is way more just like for everyone, which is really awesome to see. And it's really rad and kind of empowering, I'd say. But being like a white cis male guy, obviously, I'm like, you know, it was never like it wasn't empowering me or something, but now it's awesome to see everyone represented.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like, it's sort of like as us being your typical white male, whatever.
Yeah.
Beyond my control, like what like the makeup of the scene.
Yeah.
You know, but somehow it came along, right? And I'm super thankful.
Yeah.
And I just want to shine a light on it, be an ally, you know, celebrate it. It makes me happy, you know. It's like just that it's evolved to that point, you know what I mean?
So
something's working.
We talked about how you're a dad. Do your kids have any interest in underground, punk, hardcore metal, or are they like, Dad, you're weird?
They don't think I'm weird. They think it's really cool.
Okay.
But they're not like, none of them are super punk rock.
Okay.
I mean, like, they're super progressive individuals.
Yeah.
But none of them like, yeah, listen to music quite as heavy as the music I make.
You Fair know enough.
And, That's fine, right? I always hated people who had an agenda for their kids where it's like, I'm going to put my kid in straight edge t-shirts when they're seven.
Punk
like,
rock dress up, right?
Straight edge when you're seven.
Give them a mohawk.
I wasn't going to dress my kids in Ramones t-shirts to prove how cool I am. So let them figure out their own shit.
That's like, you know, the punk rock stage
mom. I
just
want them to be like individual.
Yeah.
And righteous people, mm-hmm. and they all are. So that checks the box, you know.
That's awesome, man. So thinking back to when you were, you know, their age or even younger, like what was your introduction to underground music, whether it be metal, hardcore punk, or just like loud underground music? What was your first introduction to it, Tim?
In terms of just sonically, I'd say it actually started with like bands like Sabbath,
yeah,
Rush. I mean, I saw Rush back in 1980, 81. That was my first concert ever.
Hell yeah.
And you know, I think it was the YYZ tour, and Neil Peart did a 15-minute drum solo.
Oh, that's awesome. R.I.P.
So So, and it's funny that I think the first metal band I saw was Rat, because they opened up for Billy Squire.
Okay.
I don't even know if you call Rat metal. Hair metal, whatever that was. But
Rat and roll.
Yeah, but I was super into music until I got into like Sex Pistols, Clash, and then from that it evolved to like Dead Kennedys, Suicidal Tendencies. You know, then I bought the Let Them Eat Jelly Beans comp, and I discovered Black Flag and Bad Brains, and I'd already discovered Minor Threat, but yeah. I had an older brother too, right? So
okay,
when you have an older, my brother's 4 years older, and he's already into punk rock, so you can. It's like that's such a great gateway into that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in New Jersey, and I could take a train to New York City as a kid.
That's awesome.
Go to Bleecker Bob's or Venus Records, and like find cool punk records, but you know. At the same time, I'm buying like XTC and Depeche Mode and like that.
Yeah.
And then one of the most mind-blowing things is like seeing the Cro-Mags at the Ritz in like 86. Like that was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And then that same year, I think I saw Agnostic Front at CBGB's.
There's your starter pack right there.
86.
Dude.
And so there... Like that, once I went to CB's, I never looked back. It was like that. Like there was no other kind of show that I was interested in. You know, I just wanted to go to these small punk rock shows where you could step up on the stage, where you could talk to the bands, where like you could be in the pit with the bands that weren't playing. You know what I mean? And just and it's from CBGB's. Like we were spoiled. So
speaking
that was sort of. My journey. I was like a suburban kid who was close enough to New York.
Yeah.
And then I ended up living in New York. And,
okay.
You know, first place I was in New York, I sublet Youth of Today's apartment when they went on tour.
Oh, that's rad.
And, lived in Williamsburg with my girlfriend and my stepbrother, and was doing a punk fanzine, Boiling Point.
Yeah.
And that was like my introduction into the scene as far as really meeting people and that kind of stuff. And then once you're surrounded by musicians in your life and you're not one, if you have any aspirations of being in a band, it's like you give singing a shot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
that's how I ended up in bands.
Well, I had a question about that, actually. I was going to ask you. So looking at the No Escape tape and thinking about... You know, you're kind of growing up in getting into hardcore, going to those shows, and then becoming a part of that community, doing a zine. What gave you the confidence to kind of just stand up front and take the microphone and start giving, singing a shot? What gave you the confidence to be the vocalist in a hardcore band?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I'm not an extrovert. I was never a kid to even get up and make speech, talk in front of class, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. I think I just in my mind thought it was like the next step, right? Like I just saw so many people in bands, and I was friends with like all the guys from Youth of Today and Gorilla Biscuits and Beyond, all these like great bands, and I just knew all, and it was such a great expression. And it just looked like something I thought I could do it. And I was so heavily influenced by like Minor Threat, like that growing up. Like it just meant so much to me on sort of a lyrical level. That I was always writing lyrics. I had like books full of lyrics. So I fancied myself a lyricist.
Okay.
And then so I was just like, the opportunity just landed on my lap. I was living with Steve-O. And he's the guitar player for No Escape.
Yeah.
And he had come back from a practice that I was not at. Like, he'd started this band with just some musicians, and he was trying out some other singers that he knew. And the guy just never sang at practice. Like, couldn't muster up the courage to sort of sing out loud. So he came home, he's like, you say you've always wanted to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, basically, I was like, shit. Like, if I don't do this, I suck. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it was literally one of those sort of
fell in your
crossroads
lap.
Moments.
Yeah.
I'm like, even if I suck, I gotta like just go all out. So that's how it happened, and I was terrified. I couldn't sleep the night before the first practice.
Yeah.
But then I found like once the music started, I was fine. You know, like, I mean, our first show was at the Anthrax, playing with Burning Herb Biscuits. So
wow.
That's my first time on stage, is playing with, like, legendary, you know, there's some legendary lineup at the Anthrax. Like, not like a quiet little soft one.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And people knew who I was from being Tim Boiling Point and all this kind of
stuff. Yeah.
So, there's a little bit of pressure, in a way, to not suck. And I, like, you know, it was like a 4-hour drive to this show, and I was just sitting in the back of the van, like, wanting to just puke the whole time. And could barely, you know, I was, like, feeling wobbly, you know. And it's, you know, completely straight edge, so it's not even like I'm going to do a shot or something.
Yeah.
On my nerves. I was straight edge at the time, I should say.
Yeah.
And then I hop up on stage, and all the butterflies go away, and I'm, like, completely fine. Because I remember someone, like someone handed me a flyer or, like, I'd make an announcement for the next week's show, or maybe there's a benefit or something. And, I'm holding this flyer before I get up there. I'm, like, going, I don't even know if I can read this thing. And then I get up there, and somehow it's just, I was fine. You know? So I don't know how to explain that.
Dude, you arrived.
Like, then you're hooked. Yeah.
Well,
then you're hooked. You know what I mean?
You have a pretty powerful voice, and I'm not the first person to say that. You have a really powerful voice, did it take a while to kind of learn that, or is that just the way it came out, or did you kind of like have to kind of practice and hone your voice? Okay,
It's a little of both. I mean, first you don't really know what you're doing,
yeah.
You know? And I'm modeling myself after, you know, Minor Threat and just hardcore singers, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's how even Chain of Strength or Inside Out. Like, I always imagined I would sound like those kind of guys. You know, Exact De La Russia. In my mind, I sounded like him. Like, so I sounded a certain way, but you don't know if it's gonna come out that way. And then you have to figure out how to breathe and how to, like, find range, even if you're someone like me. And I really prided myself on that. But it took a while. I mean, I what I know now versus, like, those first No Escape practices is night and day. So I know how to find that power. And it's a little bit of a blessing. I think there's something there that not everybody has, I guess, that I can just really, I'm lucky to have. And there is something inside me that is perpetually unresolved. Like, because in practice, I might have, like, one hook lyrically now, and I just will just riff over a song and then write the rest of the lyrics. I don't have to, like, stop in the middle of the song and, like, write down, and I'm sort of exploring inflection and stuff. So, I don't know, it's gotten more nuanced.
Yeah.
It's funny, because if you don't listen to that kind of music, a lot of people think it sounds all the same, but I'm pretty proud of my vocals, and I try to find a lot of nuance in it. And I do think it's definitely an evolution from where I started. And I feel like good advantage, like, it's going to evolve even more. You know, that's almost part of the frustration is, like, it takes me a good 3 months of practice, 2-3 months, to really break my voice in where I could, like, take it everywhere I want it to go. It's literally like getting back into shape. And then if I take a couple weeks off, it's like I lose a lot again, and I have to go back and find that range again. And I discovered that because I did a lot of, like, the Process Black, or even doing the guest vocals for Every Time I Die. It was really hard for me. I didn't have the range I was used to when I was on Kiss Goodbye.
Yeah.
Because I was, like, in the zone. You know, I could do whatever and, like, not lose my voice for a millisecond, come back the next day. Like, you get to that place. I don't even know how to explain that, but you just sort of, I think a lot of it is just from practice, you know, just constant practice.
Building it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we talked about what got you there and your inspiration as far as starting and whatnot. But today, you know, after all these years, you're still doing bands, you're doing underground bands. It's not like you're starting this, you know, super group that's like touring the world in some bus. Like you're on the ground level, you know, grinding it out with like underground bands. And what inspires you to stick to it and start things anew?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those, like, it's not a midlife crisis, because it's like it never went away.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, a midlife crisis would be me buying a sports car.
Yeah.
It's like, at what point do you stop? I mean, I never did it for any kind of money or fame, clearly. Mm-hmm. And the fame, any quote unquote fame, has been surprising and unexpected, you know, like, that people still listen to this stuff and still react to it. I don't know. It's just like, it's one of those things where it's funny. Cause my wife, when I started getting back into it, she's like, yeah, you're never happier or more fulfilled than when you're doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's just creating something out of nothing. And it's also like, so yeah, it's not about, you know, 5,000 people at a show or anything like that. It's like, to me, it's that getting in a room with four other guys and making something out of nothing. Like, yeah. Literally, like these are songs that now exist, right? Like, it's sort of a trip, and there's something. And to me, I'm like, the more you can be a part of that, and the more you can keep creating those things, the better.
Yeah.
It just feels like a really useful way to spend my time, as opposed to, I don't know, buying things. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree. Yeah. You're adding something.
It's funny
to the
because
world.
People my age tend to just settle in and, they get a gut and they, I don't know, watch a lot of sports and, I don't want to make fun of anything, but it's just, that's not what I'm interested in. You know what I mean? Like, it's way more interesting to, like, you know, try to be creative and try to make something out of nothing and try to also, like, go against the grain. Like, there's so much, it's like, it's funny, we sort of reserve all of this anger for teenagers to be pissed off at the world.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm maybe more pissed off at the world now and more disappointed in my peers, because the older you get, the more people just cash out and worry about tea times or whatever. So you almost get more pissed off because you're more, there's less and less the older you get. I mean, it's more niche to be someone that actually gives a shit. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. Absolutely,
it's still there, you know? And
yeah.
It's like, it'll be there until it's not, but it's there, and I'm lucky that I found other guys that'll make the music with me, and people seem to want to listen to the records a little bit, so it's all good.
And it is all good. The album, again, is This May Hurt a Bit, the new Bitter Branches EP. You can order the album. You can also stream it anywhere you stream records. Just two more questions for you, Tim, real quick. Being that we are a Seattle radio show, you are very connected to the Northwest. What are a few of your favorite Northwest bands of all time?
I seem to remember Bosch Kicking Ass.
Oh, yeah.
Playing Enemy, my boy Damien.
Yeah.
You know, you can go old school and talk about, you know, bands that were great in the day, like Brotherhood.
And I know you mentioned Soundgarden.
Early Soundgarden, early Nirvana.
Yeah.
I mean, all Nirvana, really, but the early stuff was what was blowing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked at Venus Records. You know, I like knee deep, you know, neck deep in the hardcore scene with Colored Vinyl and 7 Inches, and then all this Sub Pop stuff started coming out. And I was working at Venus Records,
yeah,
desperate to put something on the turntable that lasted more than, you know, a minute and was something besides just. And I loved hardcore, but I was just like, I gotta listen to something else.
Switch it up, yeah.
Like Bleach came out. I forget which Soundgarden came out. Mudhoney, Touch Me, I'm Sick came out.
Yeah.
NWA also came out at that time. There's like so much great came out.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the Northwest, is that early Sub Pop. there's so many great early sub pop bands, and it got ruined by the label grunge. You know what I mean? But like Tad or the Melvins, like there's so much great.
Totally.
You know what I mean? That sort of gets lumped into this lame sort of MTV label.
Yeah.
But there's some really killing going on in the late 80s, early 90s.
Agreed, man. Thanks for all those shout outs. And my final question for you, Tim, if you could pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it.
All right. Well, there's the one on my forehead, and it's from me getting 9 stitches, which is a Dead Guy song.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that's a pretty memorable scar just because I wrote a song about it.
Yeah.
The short story of that is it was cold out, a brick hit my head in front of my house, ripped my skull open. I run into my parents had just gotten divorced or in the middle of a divorce. I'm really young at the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kindergarten or first grade or something. I can't remember exactly the year. I'm running into the house bleeding. And I don't even know who this guy is that's helping me because he's the latest guy to be in my mom's bedroom kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what the song is about. About this like idea that there's a stranger in my mom's bed that should be my dad. You know, and so there's a whole, if you read the lyrics now, you can probably get a new sense of the song. But that'd probably be.
Damn.
I mean, I've got a lot of other scars, but that's probably the most poetic scar that I have.
Where did the brick come from?
My brother.
Okay.
He threw a brick at me when I wasn't looking.
I was like, what the hell? Where'd it come from?
But, you know, he's probably 9. He's just a stupid kid, too.
Yeah.
And he yelled, duck, and I turned around, and next thing I know, a brick hits you right in the face. So instead of ducking, I turned around. And chaos ensued. And then I remember going to school with 9 stitches.
Brutal.
Because I just remember telling, and, you know, I think it was in second grade, because I remember telling kids, like, yeah, I got 9 stitches, you know, like I was in tough or something. I was not tough at the time. And I just really remember more having this epiphany of like, you know, when you're that young, you sort of want your dad taking care of you. And
yeah.
It's like this stranger. So
this was weird. What the hell?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good scar story, man. I appreciate you reliving those weird moments with me for a good scar question.
Yeah. No worries.
So, again, this is Tim Singer, and you can check out all of his old bands, Dead Guy Kiss Goodbye, No Escape's going to have a reissue, Process Black Project, and now you can check out Bitter Branches. This May Hurt a Bit is streaming now, and you can order the record. Do you have any final words for the Northwest or Seattle or anyone that's just kind of going through the weird world of 2020 in America?
No, just get out and vote and vote for Biden.
There you go.
Hope that's not too direct, man, but that's all I think about right now, man, is like we need to get out from under this plague, you know.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.